At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome to the SDR Disco Call Vidcast and Podcast, a show designed for brand new sales reps working in the world of tech sales. I'm your host, Neil Buyan, and I'm going to be taking you on a journey on the SDR Disco Call Vidcast and Podcast. Did you know that you can watch this show live with the guests on YouTube? This show is available on YouTube at happyselling.io. Hello, listeners, watchers, and subscribers. Welcome to another episode of the SDR Disco Call Show. If this is your first time joining the show, this is a show for tech sales development reps, or BDRs, from around the world, where we interview other SDRs and BDRs that are in the field, and we get insights into their career, how they got down with this. We're going to figure out how they're navigating their career to give best practices to you to help you become happy sellers. If this is also your first time joining the show and you're listening to this in our podcast platform, please give us a rating and a like. And if you're watching this on YouTube, please make sure that you like, comment, subscribe, and leave a comment down below. So with the beautiful guest that we have on today's show, this is somebody that reached out to me a few months ago. And when I came across their profile, I saw that they had an extensive career and they also had an affinity with music, which I really love. And this person has done a lot of things. And I'm really excited to bring this guest on the show. So, guest, could you please introduce yourself? Who are you?
Hi, Neil. My name is Melinda Matkowski, and I am a sales specialist working for Soul Marketing in Pardes Hana, Israel.
Love it. Melinda, welcome to the SDR Disco Call Show. It's an absolute pleasure to have you on board. So, Melinda, just at a high level, what does your company do, and what do you do for them?
We do lead generation and email marketing for tech startups all over the world, not just in Israel. And my responsibilities include onboarding the customers, doing lead sourcing for the customers, and creating a revenue pipeline on LinkedIn.
Absolutely love it. And again, as a gentle reminder for our watchers and listeners, Melinda's LinkedIn profile is going to be in the show notes if you want to reach out to her, connect with her, and pick her brain on anything on tech and SDR related. She's somebody that's very active on LinkedIn. I love seeing her posts and seeing her engage with the community out there in sales. So Melinda, for our listeners and watchers out there as well, could you tell us, outside of sales, what does Melinda Matkowski like to get up to outside of sales?
Well, I have twin boys, teenage twin boys, so I'm constantly wrangling them. They are very active in sports, like I was. I was into gymnastics and yoga basically my whole life. So I love yoga. I love Pilates. I work out whenever I can. Hiking in Israel is amazing. We have wonderful nature, some of the best beaches in the world. So I'm very busy outdoors most of the year.
I love it. Super active. Melinda, I love that. So again, for our listeners and watchers, what we like to do at this point of the show is visit our guests' LinkedIn profile to kind of see like where they've come from. And Melinda Matkowski, you have an impressive career. I'm not going to lie, right? So again, Melinda's somebody who's highly active on LinkedIn. She's got a lot of great content. And you know, I love reading your stuff and your posts when you come up onto my feed. So if we look at your career, you've been to some cool places and you've known some cool people, Melinda. So, you know, you've been an executive assistant on Saturday Night Live, the famous TV show. I was like, wow. Yes. You've also been a music supervisor on the MTV show, The Osbournes. So everybody that knows Ozzy and Sharon, that's that show. Like, wow. You've done a lot of cool things in terms of music and working in media and TV. You've also worked at Elos Health and, you know, most recently for the past couple of months you've been a sales specialist at Soul Marketing. So rather than sounding like a job interview, I'd love to know in your own words, Melinda, like walk us through, like, how did you go from, you know, working the world of TV media and then coming into tech? What was that journey?
I just want to say that there was never any other job that I wanted but film and television and music. It had to be in that realm. I grew up in New York. I grew up, you know, in the club scene and also very much involved in going to museums and art shows, and all of those worlds collide together, like TV, film, art, it all, and music, it's all together. And in New York, you're on top of each other. So that was my goal for my entire life. And luckily, I was able to fulfill my dreams, really. I mean, I got some of the best jobs you could ever get in this business. I lived in New York and I lived in Hollywood. So it was a really, first of all, it's a very hard business. You have to work really, really hard. Yeah. And you can't give up because there's 50 people that want your job. So it's very competitive. And being from New York, thank God I'm born competitive that way. So it was just a natural gig for me. I got married pretty much in the middle of my career. I had twins, moved around the country a little bit, and then moved to Israel, Startup Nation. So while living here, I've been exposed to some of the most amazing innovations in tech for the last 10 years. My children started getting older. I started thinking about what I want to do. And I fell into first a job in e-commerce for a supplement company. We created supplements and beauty products, Marketilly. And that was amazing. Like first, like putting my feet back into the working world. With a lot of research, data analytics, a lot of online, you know, stuff. So it was just a good kind of like getting back into the world online kind of thing. And then, unfortunately, I broke my arm. Ooh. So I was home on the couch with a broken arm, and I saw a course scholarship from the Ministry of Innovation in Israel for English speakers that live here to help sell tech abroad. And I applied, I got the scholarship, and I joined a course called, it's from a company called Jolt. It's like a mini business school for tech sales and business development representatives, and it's called Enter. So that gave me a really good blueprint for what I wanted to do, and it gave me access to a whole new tech stack that I didn't know existed. You know, Monday, Salesforce, Slack. You know, we had to do a capstone project, picking a company that we wanted to sell. That was our final project, and it was a pretty long course. It was 6 months. Wow. Luckily, because I was born to network, and that's what I did my entire career in entertainment, I was able to connect with other students in my class, and someone told me about a job that was coming up basically the day that I graduated, and that was Elios Health. Cool. And of course, there are tons of SaaS platforms, you know, to sell in Israel especially. This one was powered by AI. It's behavioral health. It was for clinicians. It was reaching out to America. And it was utilizing all of the skills that I learned in Jolt. Prospecting, lead generation, LinkedIn, Zoom info. I mean, everything that I learned was right there in my job interview. I was able to say, I understand this. I can do this. And not only that, I was passionate about it. So that was my first job as an SDR in tech. And it's just been ever since, I have not gotten bored in this world. I feel like the startup world is very much like a television show. No, kind of the first episode, no one really knows what they're doing.
It's like the pilot, right?
Yes. Yeah. And they have a vision, and then you edit it, and you keep editing it, and then you keep doing, you know, over and over and releasing. And that's exactly how I feel. So I'm so happy that I wound up in this world. It's really been very satisfying.
I love it. There are so many things that I want to dive into, like with your wealth of experience and like you going through different industries, going into different roles, you know, coming into tech and everything. If we kind of start at the beginning, like you said, you know, working and living in Hollywood, for a lot of us, that kind of seems like a dream, right? For those that work within media. How did you get in? What was life like working in Hollywood? Because as you said, it's very competitive. And like, you know, luckily for you, you came from New York. So, you know, you're not going to mess with Melinda. What was that life like living in Hollywood and working there?
It was, first of all, when you arrive in Los Angeles and you know, I actually moved right to Hollywood proper. So I looked up coming from the airport to the Hollywood sign. And thankfully, I had a friend there. He helped me get an apartment. And we lived right in the heart of Hollywood. So it was just exciting. Every day was exciting. My first job was at Paramount, working as a production assistant for a show that, you know, went for 10 episodes and then didn't get picked up. That's what it's called. So every day was just, it was just an experience. It was like I said, very creative, working with writers, you know, directors, camera people, sound people, prop, you know, prop. It was, and then seeing the post effort, which is the editing and the music and the coloring. So it was basically, I went to school for film. So it was just everything coming into 3D for me. And, and it was what I wanted to do and where I wanted to be. So the main thing that I had, like I told you, networking, always being, you know, in the middle of something, showing up for everything, showing up early, staying late. I don't know if that's still a thing anymore, but back then it was about being the first one there and the last one to leave. I know that that's not, you know, kind of work-life balance anymore, but that was what I did. And it was, you know, people respected me. I respected them. Staying in touch. I'm still in touch with people from, you know, from that, all that, those years ago. Some of my best friends I made there. So it was just, it was what I mean, it was what I wanted. I manifested it totally. Like,
So let's just stay there. So I heard something very powerful. You manifested it.
Yes.
So I'm very aware of manifestation and I've manifested a lot of things in my life. But for somebody who may be new to manifestation, how would you describe it, Melinda? And what would be the benefits of trying to manifest things into your life?
Okay. So I've read a ton of self-help books and I learned meditation before this call. Everyone, we did a breathing exercise to get me in the zone. So I highly recommend if Neil invites you, at least for that, you'll, some people never close their eyes and breathe. You know what I mean? So closing your eyes and breathing and imagining what you can accomplish. And any little accolade I got, any little, you know, any support I got from people in my career, I didn't push it away. I really held on to that to give me more self-esteem to consider what could be possible in my life. And there was nothing I didn't think I could accomplish. The only things I didn't accomplish were the things I didn't want to, the things I didn't let myself. There was always a door to be opened if I was willing to work at it. And so that's what manifesting is. It's not just picturing the, you know, like a vision board. Vision boards are great. I love them. But how do you make that vision board come true? You have to open, get those doors open. You have to kick them down. You have to talk to the right people. And it's, and you have to not give up if that's really what you want. So I think negative thinking will destroy the manifestation. I'll tell you a quick story. I was in Miami for the summer. And there is a podcast that I love called Drink Champs.
Okay.
And I was in touch with one of the hosts, DJ EFN, and we, you know, I was like trying to like get his attention on Instagram because I knew I was going to be in Miami. They shoot it in Miami. I mean, now podcasts are the new television shows, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So you're right.
I wanted to go record to a recording of this podcast, and he doesn't know me, even though, you know, I worked at MTV and everything. He doesn't know me. We never crossed paths. There was no way. Somehow I said, I'm going to that show. I'm going to a taping of that show. And within, you know, a week of me being in Miami, there was a mutual friend, MC Search from Third Base. And I said, Search, could you call them and see if I can go to Drink Champs?
Get the referral,
and,
right?
Yeah, you have to. Yeah, I mean, they're not going to. And they did. And when I showed up, I sat there. It was a four-hour recording. They don't edit. They don't edit. And you can't leave. You can't make noise. So they don't have guests. It's not a you know, Sally, like a studio audience, you know? So it's straight 4 hours of them, you know, drinking and smoking. And at the end, I said, hey, it's me, DJ. And he's like, you manifested this. I said, I did. I was not going to leave Miami until somehow I was able to not only meet you, congratulate you, because as a television person, I know that this is massive. What you're doing here is massive. It's like no other hip hop entertainment show. And then look what happened. They had the biggest scoop of the year with Kanye. So it was a very, very good experience for me to remind myself, you know, I'm not too old. I have dreams still.
Yeah.
You know, I made them happen before. And this summer was a perfect example of me, you know, I mean, it's not a job or anything, but it was just a great experience. And, you know, I was so grateful for it. It's special. You know, when you get to see something like that on the other side of the camera, it's special. And I appreciated it. So.
Awesome. That is freaking amazing, Melinda.
Thank you.
Like, you're very right, and you said something very pertinent there, which was, you know, with doors to success, if the door's locked, then smash the door in, right? And you got to keep going for it. And you're right, I've got like a vision board in front of me, but there's a mindset that I've learned where a lot of the time in my past, I'd say, I want to do this, I want to go there, I want to do this, I want to accomplish this. But I had to change the phrase of what I was saying. I then changed it to, I will do this. I will meet that person. I will go into that company. And even the last couple of months, I've had to do a lot of things which have been outside of my comfort zone. And normally where I'd stagnate and maybe procrastinate a little bit too much, but I know just F it, just do it, dude. Because the more you keep thinking about it or, you know, just pondering, it just doesn't happen. And you just have to go get it, right? And I love that energy with you because like even when like for our guests and listeners like Melinda, when you reached out, you like reached out by email, you're telling me what you know about the show, you want to get in touch. And I was like, who is this lady? She's like, she's coming with some strong game here. So I was like, okay, I need to know who she is. So I love that with you. And, you know, another point that I'd like to dive into a bit is this networking piece. So, you know, you said you were born to network. So networking is what's helped me get into many places and do a lot of, you know, cool journeys in my life. What tips would you give to somebody who, you know, whether it be in sales, music, or whatever they're doing with their life, how can they best start networking with people? How do they put themselves out there? How do they get over the fears of, you know, how people may perceive them with, you know, imposter syndrome stuff? What tips would you give for networking, Melinda?
I think that whenever you meet someone, you know, who is your contemporary, who you feel, you know, you have the same vibe with, whether it's with business or personal or community, religion, anything, you know, you get to know the person, you schmooze with them and you stay in touch. Like that's the most important thing. And thank goodness we have social media because it used to be a Rolodex, a telephone call and then eventually email, but really, or showing up to the coffee shop or the club or, you know, anything that you were invited to. That's the main thing. Don't think that there is anything beneath you to show up to. If you're invited to something, you see a sales, you know, a conference. We had one here in Israel. It was amazing. I met a bunch of other SDRs. You know, really show up and don't show up and stand in the corner. Smile, say hello. People want to talk. That's why we're there. Mm. And, you know, keep in touch. And the great thing about LinkedIn is that commenting on your posts, for instance, when I see you post something interesting, I comment. I'm not being phony. You know, it's real. It's a real sincere. And that's the other thing is being sincere. People can tell if you're being sincere, if you're really into what they're saying. Are you listening? Make sure you're listening and, you know, stay in touch. And that's, and then there was actually a job that I saw on Facebook a couple of years ago. And I looked, who do you know in common with me? And she knew a friend of mine from LA that I worked with at MTV. And it was someone in Israel, a startup. And I said, David, can you please give me an introduction to her? And he was like, because he's been in the same company for a long time. He was like, that was great networking. You know, I don't reach out to him all the time, but we had a good, you know, rapport. And maybe I didn't talk to him in 5 years even. I had no problem asking him to introduce me. And she said it. She goes, I wouldn't have talked to you if he didn't reach out because your resume doesn't really fit for this job. So it was a great experience. And it reminded me again, as I was getting back into the world of business, that these are the kind of relationships you always want to keep. And a good way to keep them is on social media.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Hell yeah. And I think, you know, there's so many things that I can relate to that in terms of the networking side of it. You know, like most recently this week in London, I went to an SDR event in London with some guys and girls called Sales Confidence. And truth be told, I haven't been to a networking event for a while. I've been to like conferences, but not like a, you know, a nice intimate room with like 50 people and some people are giving presentations and talks. And there was a part of me before I went to the event thinking, I don't want to go because I'm really comfy at home and I don't know these people and I could just, you know, forget about it. But then there was this thing inside me saying, Neil, you like if you love SDRs and you want to be in that world, then you need to go visit that world and you have to feel a bit uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And going in the room, like, you know, I could do that thing of just sitting in the corner and just having my Pepsi and just like not talking to anyone. But I was forcing myself to constantly just go up to people, shake their hands, saying, how are you doing? And then some people come and say, hey, you're Neil from LinkedIn. You're that happy selling guy. And I'm like, hi, nice to meet you. And there is always that fear when, you know, some people come up to you like, hi, Neil, nice to finally meet you. And I'm like, I don't know who you are. Wow. Because you see so many, I'm good with faces. I'm just really bad with names, right?
Uh-huh.
But yeah, the networking piece, you know, you have to keep pushing yourself out there. And that's how you get to know people. And it was through music that I got into tech sales, because the tech recruiter that got me into tech sales, like for a US company, was the partner of a musician and DJ that I used to work with. And I remember we went to a party one day and me and this recruiter are talking and she said, so what do you do? And I was like, I work in B2B sales. I work in telesales. And she was like, and I was like, what do you do? She said, I work for tech startups. And I said what I did. And she said to me, do you want to be rich? And I was like, huh? And that's kind of like how I got into tech sales. So there's a lot there. But I'd also love to know, you know, for somebody that's had an extensive career working within media, and you alluded to earlier that, you know, you came across Jolt, you went through the training with them, you learned about tech sales and, you know, finding out about the world of startups. How did you make that transition of working in, you know, from Hollywood and then coming to tech? What was going through your mind and how did you go through that transition?
I didn't think that I would even be interested in it. But when I saw the innovation and the platform and even the graphics, like the graphics really excited me. I like to see the visual. And even though these are not visual products, it's still exciting to see how someone markets their product. So the marketing was the same thing as kind of what I did with music, was how am I going to sell the scene? How am I going to actually buy the music to sell the scene? And is it even possible? And then putting all of that together and creating an amazing scene with an amazing song that the audience, you know, resonated with the audience. So it was the, it was just very similar in a way. And I you would think, oh, your ego, you have to work in music, you have to be fancy, whatever. No, this is fancy, actually. This is really, because it's really, it's creating a lesser workload for a lot of people in a lot of different industries. And it's just creating, this gives people more time. Like it gives people more time to do a better job, to be with their families, to impress their bosses, whatever it is. I love that these tech solutions are impacting so many industries and so many people's lives for the better.
Yeah.
That I've been through the advent of the internet. So I remember AOL, and I remember how cool it was to do instant messaging. So this is, you know, it's like they say that about Gen X. You know, we had 1 foot in analog and 1 foot in digital, and that's where we're at. You know, so it was very natural for me to embrace this technology and to learn about it. And I, you know, I really try to learn about it every day, just the way I still stay on top of the music every day. Like I'm on Spotify all day, all night, listening to new artists. So It's great that I can still have my passion for that and a new passion for the digital tech world.
You're right. And you know what? In recent years, there's been a lot of musicians that have come into tech as well. So like with Jay-Z and Tidal, Ryan Leslie, one of my favorite like R&B producers and singers, like he's got his own tech company as well. And I'm like, rah, all of these guys and girls are getting into tech and it's growing. And to your point, you know, coming from that world of welcome to AOL, and having that dial-up and being in front of a screen and, you know, experiencing something through your browser, not having to download a program to your PC or, you know, your Windows-based system, using things like LinkedIn. So, like, using cloud and tech and SaaS, it's been there. We've kind of been at the beginning of that and seeing that transition. And I think what makes it really exciting is when you see cool new things coming on board. So, like, right now, the hottest craze is obviously AI. And ChatGPT and seeing all these tools. I geek out on this stuff, Melinda. Yeah. When I see it, I'm like, ooh. But it was like back then when I first saw the AOL 95 dial-up screen dialogue come back, I was like, wow, we're going to connect to the internet. We're going to speak to other people. And this also opened up a door of connecting with people across the world that you normally wouldn't have had the opportunity to your earlier point of the Rolodex and having a phone and speaking to lots of people. And I think the funniest thing that I've come across, and I'd love to get your thoughts on this, is for somebody that's done music and, you know, being on LinkedIn and we have followings and whatnot, strangers tend to support you more so than your friends and family when you're doing this sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. And I've kind of put it down to because your friends and family know you as Melinda, or they know you as Neil, that guy that grew up, went to college, like lived life, etc., etc. But when you're a personality or you're a persona online, strangers will, you know, give you props, like you for what you do. But your friends and family are like, yeah, well, Neil, what are you doing? Like, come and grow up a little bit. I'm not sure. Have you ever experienced that or ever thought that? Or what are your thoughts on that?
I do find, I mean, I'm pretty active on Instagram as well. Yeah. And I actually spent during the pandemic a lot of time on Clubhouse, the audio app.
Yeah.
And I met a lot of people from the entertainment world, whatever. I've never met them in real life.
Yeah.
They are very supportive of me on Instagram.
Yeah.
If I write one of my sad days, like I just need to get through the day today, or one of my, you know, fun little quirky thing and add a song, they're so supportive and it's so nice. Also, obviously the new people, I think that LinkedIn, it's a little bit harder to determine who and what and where, because every day it seems to be changing who's liking my posts and who's not. And the hashtags really are important.
Yeah.
But I always, again, manifesting support. You can manifest support.
Mm.
You can manifest support by saying, focusing on a certain post and reading more and more and more about it until, you know, you're connecting with all these different people that also want to talk about that post. So it's fine with me if I don't know these people in person. I love these online kind of relationships and support network. It's great.
I love that. And coming on to like online and tech and tools. So obviously when you're going through Jolt, you were learning about lead generation, you were learning about sales tools. So, you know, like Zoom Info, Apollo, Slack, et cetera, et cetera. Most recently, I've been working with a lot of new SDRs and coaching them. And one thing which is coming up again and again is, Neil, there are all these so many tools that people are using day to day. I see my peers using them. They're uploading leads. They're like putting them into cadences. They're messaging people, they're doing video notes and voice notes and all of this sort of stuff. And it really overwhelms them. And sometimes they feel really out of depth with this tech and these tools. So let's take a pause on, you know, doing the actual career, but the day-to-day of doing these tools. How did you find it using these tools, and kind of like how is your brain dealing with it? And what advice would you give to somebody that's maybe a bit not tech savvy and they're a bit apprehensive about using these tools because they feel there's just so much going on? What advice would you give to them, Melinda?
So how were you finding the leads that are getting you appointments?
That's it. Yeah.
So I really, you know, I've used a bunch of those lead generation tools, including using Sales Navigator quite a bit, getting the emails from, you know, all these different integrations like Apollo, Zoom Info, Surf. I really am enjoying right now. I think that it's great, and it saves everything into my CRM, but I have to go through LinkedIn first. Mm. So I get to know the persona first. Mm-hmm. It's not just typing a name and saving it into your CRM. It's actually looking at the person and then deciding to save them and then deciding to, you know, reach out to them. So I think that the main thing is focus on what is going to build your pipeline.
Mm.
And if one tool doesn't work, move on. Really move on. And you see, if you're getting too many bounces in your emails, people aren't connecting with you, you're not really quite sure if they're the buyer persona that you need to reach out to. So it's really about not multitasking. It's about like focusing very, very clearly on who you want to get. And all of those tools can create a lot of noise.
Yeah.
So I just put them aside and say, which is giving me the best information? Where am I getting the best information to get to my goals?
I love that. And for somebody, you know, that worked in Hollywood, came from New York, you don't want to mess with Melinda. In this gig of being an SDR, we face a lot of rejection. And for somebody like you that has this strong want to connect with people and network and knows how to do it, how do you deal with rejection, Melinda, like in this role?
I don't do cold calls.
Okay. Tell me more.
I mean, it was... Okay, so I used to call people and say, this is Melinda from MTV.
Mm.
Get put right through.
The weight of that, right?
Right. You work for a tech startup, and this is Melinda from, you know, X company.
Mm.
What do? You try to explain it to them in 10 seconds, they hang up on you.
Mm.
So for me, I will do warm calls. I want to introduce myself virtually first somehow. Before to hopefully see if they're even interested to talk to me on the phone or to have a bigger conversation with me. So I try to avoid the rejection, but of course, recently I sent an email to someone who I didn't warm up first. And he was like, "Where did you get my email? You know, how dare you get me off of this list?" And he didn't like the tone of the email. It was a little bit too familiar for him. This was a fintech guy.
Yeah.
So it was pretty harsh. And I just was like, okay, this is fine. This happens. It doesn't happen that often because I try to, you know, not bother people.
Yeah.
But, you know, sometimes you have to. Sometimes you have to, and you have to get hung up on, and you have to just roll with it. And there are people that I see on LinkedIn that talk about this, and they are pounding through the phone calls, doing the emails, and, you know, getting bounces or getting hung up on, and they do not stop until they book that meeting or the five meetings or whatever their goal is. So I have a lot of respect for that. And if you can build up your stomach to be able to get hung up on, then it's perfect job for you.
It does build a thick skin. And, you know, I think the more you get used to put it plainly, being punched in the face with rejection on a daily basis, you kind of get used to it, and you can try and not let it affect you as much or take it on board. And, you know, being able to not bring it home when you've had a tough day of being beaten up is something that you learn over time as well.
I want to say one more thing.
Yeah.
There was something that gave me a much thicker skin, which was working for very difficult people in Hollywood. That was actually when I arrived there, they said, because you're from New York, we're going to give you this more difficult producer to deal with. You're going to be able to stomach, you know, whatever it is. You don't have to say please to me when you ask me to do something. I don't stand on ceremony to, you know, get you to, please, Melinda, please go get me a coffee. No, it's fine. I'll get you a coffee. That's my job. So I think that really, you know, I saw a lot of things, and I experienced the rewards, though. The rewards of being able to let things flow off you, not to be abused. You know what I mean? Sometimes this does feel like abuse when you're getting hung up on all day. It feels abusive. But just to be able to go, you know, go with the flow and say, this is my job. This is what I want to do. You know, if it's worth it, I'm going to, you know, keep going. And that's exactly what I did. It was worth it for me to deal with difficult personalities and go home at the end of the night and feel good about the job that I did.
I love that. And yeah, I can imagine dealing with a lot of difficult people in Hollywood. Yeah. I've met a lot of, let's just put it this way, divas or people that are very, you know, well-known celebs, and they have a different way of thinking and a different way of life. And I respect them for that, because that's how they got to where they got to, right? Mm-hmm. But another thing I'd love to ask is, so you're somebody that's very active on LinkedIn. You know, you're, to your point, you're commenting on people's posts, you're creating your own posts. What's kind of like a hot topic for you right now that you're seeing a trend in, like, be it LinkedIn or in sales development? What's really big for you?
Okay. So I see a lot of ChatGPT posts and carousels and people, you know, either bemoaning the fact that it's taking over. It could even be taking over the music business. It's not ChatGPT, but AI, you know, creating a song from Drake and The Weeknd was, and it got taken down. A cease and desist happened. So that kind of innovation is right now the biggest trend that I see on LinkedIn. And I've been trying to share about that as how it's relevant to me, which is my prospects are in health tech. That's who I am targeting for my lead generation services. Yeah. So I am trying to post things in that vein. So AI, ChatGPT for healthcare, med tech, like that.
Love it. And you know what, like, I am a big geek on AI. And you know what, I kind of noticed things with AI, like, a couple of years back with, like, deep fake videos. You know, videos of, like, Donald Trump or, like, certain celebrities where their masks, their faces are being masked by AI, and it looks like they're talking or they're doing that video. And there was, like, one for Barack Obama. And I remember back then thinking, like, damn, people are going to be able to impersonate or do anything around certain people. And then obviously with the launch of OpenAI and ChatGPT, I was like, rah, this is freaking cool. I remember showing my friends, showing my family, like, some guy was showing me on LinkedIn, like, how he uses it. And, you know, these sort of tools, it's just the way that things develop and the way things evolve in terms of tech. And that's, again, why I love working within tech, because there's so many cool things that come out every day, right? And I saw the other day a post by Stephen Bartlett where this lady was posting that she was in her car, she was crying her eyes out, and she said basically a scammer had called her impersonating her brother using AI voice. And this person had basically tried to say that her brother was going to kill himself. He's going to be in some sort of crash and to start calling their grandparents. But basically, cut long story short, this scam was trying to get money out of them to send them money by using AI voice. And when I saw this sort of post on LinkedIn, I saw everybody like commenting and saying, this is why AI is dangerous. You know, it's taking over the world. And going on to your early point of people being fearful that it's going to be taking over their jobs. I don't feel that it would ever replace a human and what they do. The human has to input certain things into it, but equally it can be abused and it can be taken out of context. And there are scary things that can be done. But I put it similar to, this is going to sound really weird, but like a gun, right? So a gun in itself is a dangerous weapon, but it's only dangerous based on who pulls the trigger, because a gun could be sitting in a gun cabinet, nobody uses it, and it could just be an ornament that's being there for looked for. But if it's then loaded with a bullet and then it's aimed at somebody and fired, that's when it becomes dangerous. And obviously there's a lot of contention of, should this be covered? Sorry if I'm going really deep into this. It's just something I'm really geeking out on. But like, this should be, you know, screened by government. They should be taking control into this. And then a part of me irked in that and thinking, well, I don't think it can be controlled by government, because this wasn't created within government. This was created by, you know, people, or people that are passionate about tech and they're creating these solutions. And the point of software is to help and make things better, you know. And then when things try to get regulated, then it kind of it does lose its essence. But I agree that AI, I'm very curious to see how it's going to evolve. And I think it's going to evolve at a very fast rate. And there is a lot of opportunities for people in sales to use it. So I use it for like this show. It helps me with post-production. It helps me create copy for the posts that I'm putting out. It helps me in business with emails, where I know what I want to respond with, but I just don't know how to put it into context or put it in a better way. So if I'm prospecting, you know, I'll write out the email and then I'll put it into ChatGPT and say, rephrase this or make this more grammatically correct. It's assisting me. It's not doing the job for me, but it's assisting me in what I'm doing, and that's where the human input is. But yeah, AI, it's mad. It's a really cool place to be, and I think it goes back to that earlier point of AOL 95. Mm-hmm. When we first saw that dialogue box and we see, here's the opportunity, but then depending on who's, you know, dialing up and what their intentions are, that's something we can't control. But I don't know, I'm going off on a wild tangent, what do you think? What are your thoughts on AI?
The first SDR job I had was at Elios, which is an AI-based product. Mm-hmm. And basically what it did was they programmed the AI to be able to understand what was going on in a clinical session, and then take that information and show, like you do, the highs and lows when you're editing audio.
Yeah.
It was much more advanced as far as, where is the client at with their therapy recovery? Like, where are they at? Where can they do better? Where can the therapist do better? Who's speaking more? Is the therapist speaking too much? Is the client speaking, you know, enough?
So therapy coaching on AI, is that right?
No, it's analytics of the session, so that the therapist doesn't have to write anything, first of all. It's recorded. Second of all, seeing like a kind of a graph or however they program that for that specific therapist, not replacing the therapist at all, just giving them data points. Like, this client has been talking about grief every single session. There needs to be an intervention. And when you see 8 to 10 clients a day, how are you going to remember every single thing? And, you know, so it's a super, super helpful way that AI is transforming the psychological clinical industry. And it's happening in every industry, especially, you know, fintech as well. So I think that people are afraid. A lot of times when I would call a prospect, they were like, what do I need a computer? I'm a person. That's a person. No, it's the assistant.
Yeah.
Like the ChatGPT is open AI, meaning open your mind.
Yeah.
You can use this to create an email, make your email better. Now, I did not see this, but I was talking to a friend of mine who's posting on a LinkedIn, and I said, you should use some graphics. You need to put a picture on your post, because the posts are beautiful. They're great, but she needs a picture. And she's like, where am I going to get the picture from? I was like, Getty Images. I don't know. You know, so we're going back and forth. She goes, I think the ChatGPT can make the images.
Yeah.
And I was like, you're right. Yeah. Tell them to make a brain in green and throw it on the post. So that was that's I'm very excited about that. That seems to be amazing. And then I recently posted that Google released a new product for editing, which is it's totally go to my LinkedIn.
Yeah. You guys and girls, make sure you check out the link for Melinda's LinkedIn profile so you can connect with her and see her post. Please go on.
Yeah. So the fact that it's also making its way into kind of just the kind of tasks that are very cumbersome, take up a lot of your time, and aren't so meaningful, so that you can actually do the meaningful work. It's just like you said, it's an assistant and across the board, and I love it. And I've tried to use ChatGPT to create something in two lines of my input. It was terrible. It was terrible. So it's true. Putting a full email and saying shorten this to 500 words.
Yeah.
It's great for that, and it's the grammar. huge help.
It does.
We needed it.
We did, like a true story. Yesterday I was coaching an SDR, and we were looking at their emails, like in a sequence that they're putting out. And what I like to do with reps is I say to them, like, let's buddy up, right? I'm going to be your counter SDR. Like, put it into the chat, tell me what you're writing, and let's look at it together. So this person put out an email, and it was very lengthy, and I was like, right, we need to kind of snip this down a little bit. So I did my own manual editing, and then I rewrote the email and then sent it back in the chat. And I said, what do you think of this? And they said, yeah, I like that, but it's just the end and the call to action I'm not too sure about. So then I took like some of the paragraphs, and we did it live on the screen where we was going to ChatGPT, and I said, make this more concise. Also, make this more grammatically correct, or make this sound more enticing to get the recipient to want to respond. And it took our original, so these were two people, we are in a chat, we then take what we took out of the chat, put it into ChatGPT, there's a lot of chat here, and then, you know, asking it to reformat it. And then when we came out with a very nice, concise, simple email, and it read nicely, and I was just like, and the other person said, yeah, I've never used ChatGPT, and I was like, I do this on a daily, you know, but we're having to put, to your point, the input in, and the parameters of what we're searching. And it will spit something back out. Now, we have the choice whether we want to take it or not. But the only way to figure out if it works is just by testing it out. So I don't think it's like a cheat code. It's just, as with any software, you put something in, you see what it spits back out, and then you then use it to help make you more efficient. Not to do your job, but to make you more efficient.
Yes.
Yeah, I think we could talk about AI for hours and hours. But Melinda,
a lot of people don't know. A lot of people have no. They think of AI. I think there wasn't there like a movie a long time ago. Like, wasn't there a movie?
There's like, been loads. Like, there's been iRobot,
little kid.
Yeah.
Created from AI.
Yeah, the film. Yeah.
Was it M. Night Shyamalan?
Yeah.
I don't. Yes. Right. Okay.
The kid that was in Sixth Sense that was also in the AI film. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that's what people think about when they think of AI. They don't realize it's like a software platform where you can type and you could speak and you can create, you know, great new things. There's so many people that always wanted to write a book, or they want to write a business proposal, but they don't have the skills to do that. And then I'm hearing it can pass medical exams. So it has a lot of information if you're willing to spend some time and, you know, don't give up your voice because it can't replace you as a human being.
But even on that, like, again, this will be kind of the last point on AI, because I think we could talk about it for hours. Like, I saw the other day, like, online, there was, like, an AI radio station. And with the AI radio station, you would input the type of music that you want. It would automatically create new songs based on what good music sounds like. And it would have an artificial DJ introduce the show and say, here's the next song that's coming up. And the whole thing was just generated by AI. So you had intro, you had the name of the show, you had a host, it made its own music and put it into a playlist. And I was just like, you don't need any production team, you don't need any artists, you don't need anything. Like, the whole radio show was created by AI. That was freaky. I found that very scary.
Was it good?
It was good. And that's what made it scary. Yeah, the music was good.
Did it have vocals?
Yeah, vocals, had sounds, it had lyrics.
Come on.
It had rap and everything. And I was just like, well, damn, yeah. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, as a music supervisor, you know, I had to come up with some creative ideas sometimes, especially when we couldn't get the actual master recording.
Yeah.
We had to re-record. And there was actually a scene where we had to sing Michael, Row Your Boat Ashore. And we had to get the whole office into a room and recorded it because we couldn't hear the neighbors who were singing it. And that's a public domain song. We didn't have to pay for it. But that's the kind of thing AI would be amazing. I would just say, sing Michael Rapaport Shore or yeah. something like it. Like if it was a happy birthday you have to pay a lot of money for.
Oh, wow.
Make up a new happy birthday song.
Yeah.
Put that in so I could, it's a new birthday and we would have to clear that all the time.
Jeez.
And that would save a ton of money. I'm just curious who is going to own that music. Like how are they going to catalog streaming rights, like all of these things, even though you're creating it, but is the program then going to own the music? Because if someone else says, I want to use that happy birthday fake song that you told the AI to create on your radio station, how are they going to get permission or do they just take it? See, this is why this Drake weekend thing was so important. Because even though it was original lyrics, it was a musician, it was a master, it was a recording, but it used, you know, the voice AI.
Yeah.
It still was an original song. So if I sing those lyrics over that same original music, I own that song. It's just that they perpetrate, you know, they took their identity by using their voices.
Yeah.
But other than that, it'll be interesting how if they're able to copyright any of these AI generated songs for use. If it, but if they become a hit on TikTok,
that's just, you're very right. And I think the only the best person to ask the question of how to deal with that would be AI itself. Like, how do you get around that? And it'll probably give you a business plan or something. Exactly. But Melinda, it's been an absolute blast, like having you on the show. And the question that I always like to ask our guests is, if you could go back in time to the Melinda who's just about to embark on her tech career, what three bits of advice would you give her? Or alternatively, for the Melinda that's going to be listening to this show in a couple of months' time, what three bits of advice would you give to yourself in the future? So which way do you want to go? Do you want to go past or do you want to go future?
I'll go past.
Go for it.
Okay. First of all, I would say that I did do, I'll say what I did right, which was I picked a company and they picked me, Elios, because I was passionate about their product and they felt that I would sell to the ends of the earth. I would not give up until I hit my goals, which I did. So I was very good at really knowing inside of me what I was going to be passionate about selling.
Yeah.
So that is so important when you take a job in tech because it can be very redundant and repetitive and you have to be able to really sell something that you're interested in. And I think that the thing that I would have done a little bit differently would be not to work 24 hours a day because I was so excited about being a first SDR, working on a brand new platform that no one has ever heard of and getting my LinkedIn game going and learning all these tools that I did not stop. I was working, you know, 15 hours a day. So I would say, just hold off. You don't need to do that. Learn to manage your time better. I think that I really needed to learn time management skills, and I'm working on that still as well.
Yeah.
I think also taking time to continue to learn from day one. Don't think because you did an SDR course or you're learning on the job that outside of the job, there's not more skills for you to learn. Or read those articles that you like. Don't just like the headline.
Yeah.
Read the articles you like. So that's another thing that I'm working on now that I wish I would have spent a little bit more time of. Which would have taken the stress away too. Because when you're learning, you're not stressed out because you're doing that for yourself.
Yeah.
So you have to do the work-life balance. Very important.
I love that. Those are solid bits of advice, Melinda. Thank you so much for sharing. And are there any shout-outs or kudos that you'd like to give on today's show?
Yes. So my founder, Ariel Levin, was the one who wanted us to start reaching out to podcasts. We are going to create our own podcast, by the way. It's more of like a question and answer Q&A on what I'm trying to accomplish with our business model, what Ariel has already done and what his role is as an influencer on LinkedIn and the head of our company. So shout out to Ariel Levin. Shout out to our staff at Soul Marketing. Shout out to my kids, Moshe Natan and Tobias. And everyone just have a great week and shout out to you because you are so inspiring. I love watching you on the podcast and on LinkedIn. And this is such a great gift that you're giving SDRs, not only the knowledge, but the you know, we don't get a lot of attention. So So if you have someone want to talk to us for an hour, it's just so, it's so nice. It's just such a nice feeling. So thank you.
Melinda, thank you so much. And bless you with that. I really appreciate that. Thank you so much. And a big shout out to our listeners and watchers that have joined us on Melinda's journey and chapter today. Gentle reminder, you'll be able to find her LinkedIn profile in the show notes if you want to connect with her, pick her brain, reach out and find out more about Melinda and what those guys are doing at Soul Marketing. Feel free to do so. If you're listening to this in our local podcast platform, please make sure that you give us a rating and a like. And if you're watching this on our YouTube show, please make sure that you like, comment and subscribe and let us know what you think of the show in the comments down below. But Melinda, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on board. Thank you so much for joining and imparting your knowledge. I'm wishing you a great and successful week, and most importantly, happy selling, Melinda.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the SDR Disco Call podcast today. We would like to get this message out to more and more sales development reps, so please like, comment, and share in your local podcast provider. If you don't want to miss a show, you can always send a blank email to SDR Disco Call, one word, at bcast, which is bcast.email, and you'll be added to our mailing list. We're also on the lookout for new guests, so if you work in the world of sales development as an SDR, BDR, MDR, or ADR, and feel that you have an important message or story to share, feel free to email us at podcast@happyselling.io, and we'd love to have you on board.